You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with Nigel Marchant, Managing Director and Executive Producer at Carnival Films, and Megan Gallagher, creator of All Her Fault, starring Sarah Snook and Dakota Fanning. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
The people that we choose to love and that we choose to rely on and trust. You mentioned Marissa and Jenny's relationship and that female friendship, and that's what we watch happen in the series in real time, whereas the marriages and the relationships that they're already in maybe aren't so perfect, but the one we watch them choose in the series is the one that's the most rewarding. It's been so nice to listen to people's reaction to that relationship and how real that relationship feels and how these two women, from a character perspective, they have every reason to not get along or to hate each other or to yell at each other. And it's the opposite of what each one of them does. And that just feels real and true to me and honest. I know a lot of women who I feel would act that be that way, be the best version of themselves in such an awful situation. So it just felt so real and true to me.
Yeah, it was really important to us to kind of not pit the two women against each other. I think we often see that in television, and what we don't explore is that friendship. So we really didn't want to put any shade on those characters at all and explore that friendship. And that there's many types of marriages in many ways, and they find strength from each other that they're not getting from their husbands.
Anybody who started the show or even just seen the trailer knows that Milo goes missing. Of course, he's been kidnapped. The only thing that could make that situation worse is what we really focus on, which is the why of it. Why did he go kidnapping, and who around you might have had a hand in it or be involved in it in some way? So that is the big question of the series. And that's what we're with Marissa through for the season, is sort of the why did this happen? And the answers therein are pretty sucker punching.
We'd read quite a few different thrillers. We were looking in this area, what we could find Megan next. And so we were looking for something in this kind of genre. You know, it's finding something that has a brilliant opening premise that is very immediate. And this novel really had that. And then a brilliant end as well. Something that felt satisfying to an audience who sat through 8 hours of a show. So looking for those two parts. And then also finding something to say about the world we're living at the moment. Kind of the heart of the story, or certainly their friendship in that pilot episode. And you can get cocooned into your world in a marriage and having children and at that stage in life. So it's nice to explore that kind of new friendship coming together and that chance meet with somebody that you really connect with. Felt really interesting to us. We probably were lucky and as all these things, when the planets align, it's an Irish novel. So we'd adapted it for Dublin and we'd shared it with our colleagues over at Peacock, really looking at a co-production opportunity. They read it and loved it and were looking for something in this area. And so said, could you locate this in America for us? We think these themes are universal. And it just so happened, Megan was writing it, who's indeed American, though lives in Europe. So it was really serendipitous that those kind of came together. The show got greenlit and we were looking at casting. And it's a really tough role. Marissa is in crisis, emotional crisis for 8 hours. And who could take us through those complexities of emotion? Who do we want to sit there and watch for 8 hours crying? You know, that it takes some kind of extraordinary actress. And we, you know, love Sarah from Succession. And we'd also seen her do Dorian Gray on the stage, which just was a remarkable performance. You know, she played every part. And yeah, so we approached her. And it was tough. She was doing 8 shows a week, as you say, had a new child, was extremely busy. But thankfully, her manager had a read of it and loved the pilot episode and was really supportive.
We really, I mean, as Nigel said, it's 8 episodes of a woman in such despair, I mean, and hysteria. And I think in an actress who wouldn't be as skilled as Sarah, the crying might come off as just 8 episodes of being a victim. You know what I mean? But because she's so skilled and because she's so interesting to watch and knows how to suck emotional juice and all different kinds of nuances out of things, it's, yeah, she's crying. Of course she's crying. Her son is missing, but she's also got this personality that bursts through in every scene. You know, she still can have a snide come in or make a joke or, you know, recognize the irony or something or upon a dynamic with somebody that existed prior to the kidnapping, all those kinds of things. She's capable of doing so much nuance and balancing so much in a scene. So, I mean, we were very lucky to have her and did cartwheels when she signed up. It's always a huge balance to try to get enough plot to keep, you know, the thriller elements going, which I enjoy very, very much doing as a writer. And I really enjoy developing with Nigel. We've got a kind of a thriller shorthand between us at this point for sure, but enough time for characterization as well. I think the first three episodes set a particular pace that's really, really breakneck. And then somewhere around 4 and 5, we were able to slow it down just a teeny tiny bit and squeeze some emotional juice before we went ramp it right back up again. It's always a balance, you know, you do the right amount of this and the right amount of that, but that's also kind of the fun of it. I was so excited so often. Jake Lacy, he's definitely has some secrets that he's hiding. And when diving into those secrets and the ways in which he's at fault for the mistakes that he's made and his part in the story, I was so interested to dive into his character as a caretaker and as somebody who's really, I think it's fair to say, obsessed with family and being needed and being sort of, as you say, in the parental role. I was so excited to do that with a male character because we so often see that in female characters who are bad people in stories. You know, they're obsessed with relationships or obsessed with children or obsessed with family or something, and it drives them to madness and that kind of stuff. We so often attribute the need for family or the need to take care of people or the need to be a hen in some way with being a woman. We don't often associate it with a man. And so I was really excited to develop a male character that way. And I was even more excited when Jake Lacy signed on because he's such a masculine guy. You know what I mean? He's such a strapping masculine guy. And I think he did a fabulous job of tapping into all of that.
At one point, it's maybe my favorite turning point in the series. It's towards the end of, I think, episode 5, and things are really coming to a boil. And Peter says what he loves most about his son are when he has nightmares and needs to be comforted. I mean, that's just effed up.
We've been back and forth on that line, Nigel, if you recall.
I absolutely do. It is the most terrifying thing. And it's great you had that response because, you know, Megan had set herself a real task on that episode. She wanted to do a real chamber piece and set it all in the house and just keep turning the temperature up, which I think is so much fun. It's such a discipline to be able to do that as a writer. And when you watch it, you don't feel that, oh, we're not going outside. It doesn't feel to an audience immediately that we've set it all in the house, and great for actors. So it was a really fun episode for Megan to write and for us to film. And you're exactly right. That line is utterly terrifying and says everything about that man. You know, when we first got the script and Megan delivered the script, it was really good fun. You were like,
but we wondered if it was too much, is it too little? And it came down to Jake's performance. I think he did it perfectly. I think he delivered it like what he thought he was saying was just a completely normal answer. I think that's why it works. I think he made it work perfectly. So credit to him.
I think years of hard work really is the honest answer. I came from production. So I was a freelancer for many years and really did the nuts and bolts through every job in production. Started as a runner, worked my way through to production manager, line producer. And then I was really lucky. Executive producer Sally Head took a chance on me and made me a producer. And it's quite hard, or certainly back then, to swap from the kind of into the editorial, into the creative. And I really learned from those people, Sally Head, and then when I worked with Gareth, of that development side of the business, that kind of creative editorial. And yeah, you hone your skills. And I think you've got to rely on your instinct and a part of it of what do I want to watch? You've got to be really passionate about anything you're developing. It's a really long process. So, you know, I don't know, Megan, what have we been? 3 years probably doing this from kind of beginning to end. The kind of American model is much more, I would think, it comes from network television, where you were producing 22 episodes a season. It was a real kind of machine, and the lead writer was the showrunner and very much was across everything on the show, the budget, the casting, the post-production, and the writing. To do those many episodes, you had a huge team of writers behind you. In England, we've always had much smaller commissions. The maximum used to be 6 episodes. So you would have a writer who was able to do, possibly write everything, much more singular voice. And I think those kind of two models have come in now with cable television in America, and then with the streamers, there's a smaller number of episodes and there is normally smaller teams of writers behind it. It's more authored. And so that in the UK, because the writers would normally work across multiple shows, the producers were much more that person, the kind of editorial boots on the ground, and what Americans call non-writing EPs, which is the production company, Gareth and I in the UK. So again, we're very hands-on, and it would feel odd to me to develop a show for 2 years and then get that show greenlit and hand, you know, there's a script and here's the budget to somebody else, go off and make that show. That would be terribly, you know, just dishonest of us to a writer not to be there all through that process with them. So I think the two models have become much closer and merged much more. The UK now writers are across every aspect of production and we work as a team. My job is really to find consensus between supporting our authors of the show, our writer and our director. And there can be numerous different voices, a number of executive producers, a number of studios and broadcasters. My job is to keep that noise away and let our authors do the show that they want to do. So Carnival itself still runs as a kind of independent at heart outfit. We're a small team. There's only 20 of us at Carnival, but we have this big studio behind us, which really is a huge benefit to us. And, you know, this show brought all of those pieces together. And it was really the first time Carnival had done an American show that was set in America. We'd made network television before, but this was America for America. So it was a really important piece of business for us and was benefited by all these different parts of the studio. We're at times where a lot of the arts are really suffering in multiple countries with funding and cost of living. Understandably, people come for the arts. But, you know, our job is at times to hold a mirror to society. We can learn a huge amount. It can really change everyone's perspective. So look, it could be escapism and we all need that at times, but it also can have something that fundamentally can't be enacted just through journalism at times. I think when you dramatize something, it can reach the very core of an audience.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.